It is March 4th, 2014, and I'm with Pastor Dennis A. Castens, who served as Good Shepherd Lutheran Church pastor from 1979 to 1992, during a time of remarkable outreach and growth. Pastor Castens, thanks for joining us today and speaking with us.
Thank you, fellas. We'll be pleased to dust off the cobwebs and remember a few things if there are any note at all for those who might be listening.
How were you directed into the ministry?
In our day, it was customary in most of our denominational congregations for simply the parishioners and the clergy to be on the lookout for someone they felt might be suitable for that office. And it was never something that we ourselves sought, but it was something motivated by others. I had an announcement over the loudspeaker when I was in high school asking that I come to the principal's office on my way home. And on my way home from high school to stop by a pastor's office, he had something he wanted to inform me of, and it was that I was to take a test and apply for a scholarship. And so that was how it all went, and it was a 7-year scholarship, which was offered by the Lutheran Layman's League. And it was given statewide on a designated day. And for whatever reason, I came out on top. And so then when the day came for the announcement to be informed, the day came and went. And we were late in the evening. It happened to be a family gathering of some kind. And it was about 9 o'clock. And someone said, "Well, I guess you didn't rate." And then the telephone rang, and so that was a 7-year scholarship that did cover about a third of the cost for education in those early years, which was really a foresight on the part of the Lutheran Layman's League at that time.
I did not know that story. That is very interesting. Yeah. It found you.
That's exactly right, and we still try to advocate the same thought today when we have second-year students. We say, you really shouldn't be the one deciding to come here. It should be someone else pressuring you to come, because then they will support you more financially and in prayer, and it'll go a lot more smoothly in our mind than if you say, "Well, the Spirit just touched me and I decided I was going to ministry." I really feel that that should not be your motivation for going to ministry.
So you experienced 7 years of Concordia training. All the way through the seminary.
Eight years. That includes a year of vicaring.
Once you graduated, did you request a particular area of the world for your first call?
There was no determination in those days. It was totally left up to the board of directors. And we were asked if we were going on the mission field to not go as a single person. And I had no other person, so I had to look for the organist who was in my fieldwork congregation and see if that might be a possibility. So we became acquainted about Christmas time, and by Valentine's Day we were engaged, and by June we were installed in our first place.
I'm hoping to be able to interview that organist whom you found and we're so goal-directed with from Christmas until Valentine's Day. Later on, her name is Alice, and she's been a marvelous helpmeet for you.
We were married after we received the call, because the call came before we had a nuptial tie. And that was to the Mid-Pacific, to Hilo, Hawaii. And there we were then for the next 14 years in the Mid-Pacific to Collinsville.
Yes, and then the call to Collinsville must have come out of the blue. Remember the call committee meeting? They met and met. They prayed and voted. My husband Richard made the call to issue the call to you in Hawaii. We trusted the Holy Spirit, but we must admit that it seemed like a stretch at the time to invite you to come to Collinsville, Illinois, the horseradish capital of the world, from Hawaii, after 14 years there. Your outreach with the gospel was very strong there. We learned years after you came to Good Shepherd that I believe it was 15 men had followed you out of Hilo into ministry. Ron Francis, who did crossbreeding with Dole Pineapple in Hawaii, and his wife Lynn. And Les Sato, who headed up Head Start, joined you on the Collinsville staff before moving on.
We remember it very well, and we were familiar with the district for several reasons. One was the district was very kind to us in lending us dollars for our work in the Mid-Pacific. The Lutheran Women's Missionary League of the Southern Illinois District had lent us at least $50,000 for the launching of an elementary school in Aiea, Hawaii. And so we worked with Pastor Coleman on that project, and that together with others who knew us, Alice's parents were living in Oakville, and so they were familiar with the needs of vacant parishes, and Alice's mother was praying secretly that her daughter might come back to mainland. And he did not let us know that until after the prayer had been answered, but it was not quite as formidable as another prayer. A pastor, Summerfield, whose mother-in-law lived in Collinsville, and he was a pastor in Nebraska, who today is a president of the Nebraska district. But when he was first assigned to Nebraska, his mother-in-law, who was a member of the Catholic Church in Collinsville, said to me, "Pastor Castens, I will become a Lutheran if you could get my wife, my daughter and her husband out of Nebraska." And he stayed in Nebraska, and today he is the president of the Nebraska District of the Lutheran Church in Missouri Synod.
Wow, it's another, so many stories in within the story. You hit the ground with your feet skating on ice. It was one of the worst storms we'd had in decades.
We did. We can remember 10 below zero weather. But our youngsters were elementary age, and they thoroughly enjoyed the change of climate and didn't have any regrets. In fact, to this day, still the happiest memory of their childhood was under the Christmas tree that holiday before he came, that we had told them there would be a yes or a no in a box under the tree as to whether we would accept the call. And they were elated to see that answer in a box under the Christmas tree. And then, of course, we traveled in January and were able to get our thermalware at discount at Ala Moana Shopping Center in Waikiki and then put that on. We landed on the West Coast and made our way. But the weather was very, very brutal for months. In fact, we don't think we thawed out until May at least.
It was
your husband that really kept us alive because it was bitterly cold. He put us in a temporary accommodations where we slept on the floor. That floor was cold, but it was better than being in an expensive place with a good floor. We did. We can remember 10 below zero weather.
Well, right away, the Good Shepherd congregation noticed that you had a plan, Pastor Castens. Do you recall what it was?
Well, our primary interest, of course, was to reach out to youngsters, and so we endeavored to open a daycare and preschool as soon as possible, and that then mushroomed into an elementary school first by way of a kindergarten, and that we felt would be most important, and along with that, of course, outreach in terms of evangelism. And we've always, of course, been involved in visitation evangelism.
You seem to have a routine. It's a tried and true focus. I'd like you to say what that is, because I'm sure you had it in Hawaii. You probably have it here in St. Louis, where you're the pastor at Peace Lutheran.
Well, we do have a routine. we know exactly what we will do every day, and that pattern does continue to happen. Yet, try to live always 2 weeks ahead of ourselves. We feel that's important. And always try to arrive early so that we are ahead of the power curve as the day advances. And our endeavor is always to be accessible and available to our people, not even just for emergencies, but almost at any time. We keep a routine so that we are available, especially on off times for laity, evenings, weekends, early mornings, and nighttime. It's just an accommodation for laity who cannot access us during the normal banking hours of the day. We don't get much in terms of requests for those days. And that's off times, unfortunately, when most pastors are available from 9 to 4, and that's not a good time for laity.
Another part of your routine is to make visits on Sunday. Come rain or come shine.
We have always indexed all of our calls on an annual basis, and each weekend we record all of the visits that are made, especially in terms of evangelism, and so they're therefore ready reference, especially in a congregation of some size, so that you're familiar with who and what happens in all these lives. And when you're brokering a couple thousand families, you need to have a way of being able to refer back, because your memory is not that reliable.
Of course not. I'm looking at hundreds of names in this book that you're showing me. That's amazing.
Yeah, we have these books, and they're cataloged by the year, and so you can take out whatever year, 2000 or 2014 or what have you,
and see a record of all the visits that were made that year.
Yeah, they're all there, and they're indexed so that you can refer back to them. We encourage pastors to do that in larger congregations. And also we encourage a filing system of hard copy items, which used to be very common for pastors. And today, most pastors just rely on Wikipedia or whatever is the latest. And so if they use that as an illustration in their sermon, that's often something everyone else has already heard the day or two before. But if you have your own filing system, then you can have lots of information, like Dr. Klaus does with the Lutheran Ministries. And you're then not always, being boring in your presentation, because you have access to so many vignettes and narratives and stories. We've, over the years, accumulated quite a few. And that is what allowed us to be involved in our daily devotions in Portals of Prayer. We contributed a number of times to Portals of Prayer, and then published a few sermon books. And in those books, primarily, are the illustrations that people look for in the publications.
Well, your fervor is unstoppable. You speak how many languages and read how many?
Well, we struggle with just dealing with our own language. We have, of course, used German over the years, and done some preaching in Europe and in Asia with Lutheran Ministries and our efforts there. But otherwise, our work here is entirely in English. I was on the mission field and did study Japanese 5 times, but without any real fluency, and did memorize enough Hawaiian to do Hawaiian weddings. And here we work with Bosnians and have been working with Bosnians for the last 13 years, and I've memorized enough of the Croatian language to do Bosnian weddings, but there's no proficiency in any of these languages.
Well, but you are fluent in German.
We have a background in German, and I was, of course, a translating attaché for Dr. Dale Meyer when he went to Europe with the Lutheran Ministries after the wall came down and when the hammer and sickle fell in Russia. Of course, as clergy, we have background in Hebrew and in Greek and in Latin, and so we did have lots of formal education with a classical language.
Yes, and I remember you teaching Greek at Good Shepherd.
Yeah, we taught Greek for about 25 years over the summer months and still do a little. We have a couple of young men now that are preparing for the ministry here in our midst that we're, again, tutoring in terms of the biblical languages, mainly Greek.
When you speak, you say, you use the word we a lot. We don't speak that many. When you say we, that's an interesting habit that you have. Who is we?
That's always remembering the one that's behind us and what we're doing, and realizing that of ourselves we have no strength. The key scripture is always the one in Second Timothy, not that we are sufficient of ourselves so as to think anything of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God, who has made us able ministers of a new testament, not of a letter, for the letter kills, but of the Spirit, for the Spirit gives life. And that was the text that the pastor who baptized and confirmed me placed on my head on the day that I was ordained into the office of the public ministry. And so it's been a special scripture through the years, a reminder.
Pastor Kastens, we know that Satan opposes what God ordains. So it's appropriate to ask what opposition you've encountered and how you have dealt with that.
The opposition of Satan is there all the time. And would you believe, for someone who has made nearly a half a century of Sunday afternoon calls, that Satan still is not tired enough to quit, and that he will still be there on every single weekend and tell you, this is the weekend that you deserve to take off because you have been so diligent in the previous weekends, this one won't hurt. And so until you get out and are on the field, and then suddenly he has to give up, and then it's easier going. But he is that way forever, and he is likewise the same with every single sermon. Now, there are clergy who, of course, do enjoy being in the pulpit, but for myself, it's always a big project. I already this morning finished my sermon manuscript for 2 weeks from now because I will be working on that. Some of us do not have the verbosity that comes naturally, so we have to work at it. I have, in my years of preaching, I have never read in the pulpit. I have always committed to memory every single sermon that I've ever preached. And I get into the pulpit without a manuscript still to this day.
And I know one of the secrets I think you shared once was that one way you do that is on Saturday. Is it Saturday you deny yourself chocolate? I find that quite compelling.
Everybody's metabolism is a little different, so we do what we can. It depends.
But there are certain denial that goes into the way you throw yourself into ministry.
Well, the brain is a muscle, and the longer and the more you memorize, the more able and capable you are to memorize. And this is why we have elderly pastors who still are very good at memorizing. And Ronald Reagan was a good example where he could still memorize many pages when he was on screen because he had been memorizing all of his professional life. And I encourage especially young people, and this is where our denomination still is at its best if we promote memorization, because public school students have absolutely no background in memorization.
Let's go back to Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, and I'd like to ask how you account for the phenomenal growth that Good Shepherd experienced while you were there, those 14 years.
Well, we have to give credit to so many. The wonderful spirit that Pastor Coleman had left by his 20 years there. The congregation did not really have a virus or any kind of internal Nicene struggles. There was a sense of camaraderie there, partially perhaps kept healthy because of continued competition with the sister congregation alongside, so that everyone was always forced to be at their best behavior. And so the opposite congregation across the village really was a catalyst that helped the members of Good Shepherd to be well-mannered in how they conducted themselves and how they the attitude they had toward their church and its endeavors. They did not badmouth or backbite. They were very amenable because it was always a direction for them to go. If they didn't like what they saw, they could go back to where they came from.
You referred to Holy Cross Lutheran Church, the church that gave birth to this mission congregation, Good Shepherd. An interesting observation. So during your time at Good Shepherd, there were building additions, a school was added. You seemed so open to the Holy Spirit's leading in many creative ways. I remember you're even encouraging me to begin a women's Bible study called Wednesday Woman, which went on for 10 years. And you sat in, you were my mentor for this, you were my spiritual counsel. And I knew you would be at the office still at 9:30, and I would apologize to Alice for that years later. Because once in a while, I would have to call and say, what does hupogrammaton mean in the Greek? We had 100 women from 14 different church backgrounds. You were there every Wednesday, sitting in the back of the church. And I realized now that you were doing doctrinal review to be sure that I didn't say something scandalous or be off the mark. And you were so supportive and helpful. And that was just one person. That was just me. There were many, many with the same story. You were always there. You were very good, Pastor, at avoiding distractions. Like an Olympic medalist. You're so much like that. You're in the moment. And what's the secret to that for you?
I can always give lots of advice to others, but I can't point to anything offhand that comes to mind.
Well, that's very humble. I know what you mean by not having secrets. You are an open book. But your intensity maybe is just inborn, and that's part of what has made it work. But there had to be times when you were treading uphill. I know there have been because you're human. You have a great God whom you serve. But what do you do when on that uphill climb?
Well, I will give an illustration of when Dr. Dale Meyer came to Collinsville, and we knew his reputation within the denomination, which would give us a tremendous sense of competition. And so he came to my office to say hello. And I immediately told him, I said, what we will do is pray that you are so successful that there won't be any seats left in your church, and then the overflow will come to the Shepherd. And so that's how we worked. And as it turned out, during that time, between the two congregations, they were both at their best, and our schools were both astounding our denomination by the tremendous number of pupils. To imagine 600 or 700 students of preschool through eighth grade in a village of only 20-some thousand really was something that outsiders could not understand.
You have employed various worship styles. A worship service for hippies in the 60s in Hilo, Hawaii. You knew when to wrap it, you told me. It seems that being that flexible leads to a vibrant ministry, but it also seems that hard work is a very huge part of it. I watched you for those 14 years you were there, and your diligence was something that was set the bar pretty high for all of us who wanted to serve alongside of you and who were inspired by you.
When it comes to worship style, as we say in America, one-third of all people like change, and one-third don't like change, and one-third are in the middle. And when we came where I'm here now at Peace, I was interviewed about 6 months before an actual call was extended to me, because they were looking for someone who would introduce them to contemporary worship, as they called it at that time. And we indicated that that was not our forte, because we had not had any experience in that area. And that would not be fair to them if we decided we would use this as, an opportunity to learn to do that. And so we left it go at that. And then about 6 months later, the telephone rang. We expected another interview, and they called and said, no, we have just had a voters' assembly meeting, and we had a unanimous vote, and you've been called to be our pastor. So we came, and they, of course, then were wondering whether we would still do the contemporary or the traditional. And we indicated, well, in St. Louis, we have 56 different Missouri Synod congregations, and there are enough here that the one-third we'll take care of with the traditional, and the other two-thirds can go elsewhere, because we won't run short. And that's how it's worked out for us. We have done as well, and we're not boasting, we have done as well with our traditional format as any of the congregations with the contemporary or blended types of formats. And that causes our people to be happy, and if they're not, they have another choice. They can go elsewhere. We couldn't, of course, have this flexibility if we were the only church in the village, but because of our setting here, we've used that pattern.
So you do what you do well.
Yeah, we do. That's exactly right. We don't leave any surprises in terms of what people expect. And people come. We had this weekend, just as you did at Good Shepherd, a choral group from Indiana, instrumentalists that came from Concordia High School in Fort Wayne, and they were with us Sunday morning, and they were all very grateful and appreciative of our traditional format. And the director said, we felt like we really worshiped this morning, and that was the attitude of those teenagers. So that was good to hear.
For seminarians who will be listening to this story, what would you say every seminarian needs to know?
Every seminarian needs to have a passion to get to know people in as formative a way as possible, to really want to be a shepherd and be there for folks, because that seems to be the most pressing need we feel in our day of socializing in an indirect way, and just to have that personal touch. We try to remember everyone on their birthday and by name, and that passion is important. We have a congregation here, a sizable number, and we do know all of the adults by their name, and we try to learn the names of the children. And it's always distressing when we find clergy that do not put forth that effort. And I would say the vast majority of pastors do not know their members. They will know the 20% that are active, but the peripheral 50, 60, 70, 80% are often left on in a marginal way. And it's very important, I think, to have that desire to get to know everyone, seek out the visitors at once. In Collinsville, of course, we had a video camera where we captured everyone going out of church, so we knew exactly who was present and absent. And on Sunday afternoon, Pastor Sato or I would always review the video, and we could even recognize people by just seeing their backside. And then we would do the church attendance and kept a roster, so that all of our years in at Good Shepherd, we had a record without having the folks sign any attendance card or attendance books. Here, of course, we have cards, which are really ideal, and go through these every. I go through the entire list on Sunday when we are home at noon. My wife usually helps me. And then I go through the entire list again then on Wednesday, because we have volunteers that come in on Thursday and Friday, and they make then calls on usually 75 to 100 homes. These are always folks that have not been present. And we make sure that we know the person's pattern. If he's a once every 6 weeks person, he will only get a call with that in mind. If it's someone who is there every other week, then we check on that. We're very careful not to aggravate because the system can easily be ruined. And we want to keep that in place. We have elders, 24 elders, and they do the same. We have a talk piece that's distributed every month. And in that talk piece, the elder is given what he can share on the telephone or online with his people. And that contact causes our church, which our size would normally in our denomination have about a 33% attendance. We have about a 58 or 59% attendance on weekends because of this contact. It's almost doubled our attendance. Doesn't necessarily double our offerings, but it does. It really makes a world of difference.
There's talk about church growth, about numbers, and I hear you saying something deeper than that, something beyond the growth and the numbers. I sense more of a focus on the individual faith walk of the member that you're concerned about. Although you do keep track of numbers, obviously, and growth, but it must come back to the individual sheep. Because you're so carefully seeing, well, were they one every 6 weeks or every other week?
And they really do relate to that, because the average person, even those that are very marginal, are deeply grateful that someone is watching and that they're accountable to. Folks that you would never imagine would even appreciate that almost always are grateful. And they will let you know if they're going to be out of town or if there's problems. And it's very interesting. They all need, in a sense, a shepherd, or they need a parent. And that is one of the rewarding aspects of the ministry, is to know that you're of value to someone else in the family.
It's not Big Brother is watching and you get door slammed in your face because you show up and say, "Where were you?" It's quite different than that.
That's exactly right. It's the very opposite of that, and it's very different. Of course, it works in St. Louis. It may not work in other parts of our nation, but primarily folks are honored to be remembered. And when we go into homes here, almost always they would be willing to take you into every closet and every nook and cranny because no one else has ever seen what they have. And then, of course, our calls on Sundays are with that in mind as well. So the home is somewhat presentable and the people have gotten their laundry and their lawn taken care of and they can now relax. And if they're Christians and weren't in church, they have a guilty conscience, and so they're more open to the visit when you come on a weekend. The visits on Sunday are extremely important, and we've made, of course, many presentations in about 5 or 6 different districts urging elders and evangelists to make visits on Sundays, and 90% of groups will not. Pastors refuse to make calls on Sundays, except enough to appease their conscience about 3:30 in the afternoon to maybe make one hospital visit, and then that's about it. And we have pleaded and pleaded and told them that the value of these Sunday calls, and so we're really happy here. We have our evangelism teams go out every Sunday throughout the year, and they're always happy to do it because they realize now how much easier the calls are on Sunday than any night or day of the week. We don't do any on Saturday, but we do them on Sunday afternoons.
Why do you suppose there's a hesitancy to do this when you have a record of it working so effectively?
It's the devil, I would say, more than any, because he knows that is a budget so important that he's going to give you every alibi possible. And especially targets pastors, because he makes pastors feel as though this is an imposition and that we're really infringing on their family time. And we have never, hardly ever, had that experience where people have said, "Well, you know, we were watching this program on television, or we were in the middle of some really animated conversation, and now the doorbell rang." that we just don't seem to find that. They almost always are just surprised that someone would care enough to show up. I mean, they don't call the police and, you know, say, why are you there? It's the other way around. I don't know how this Satan is just very opposed to this kind of ministry. Just I can't think of any other reason why clergy, who this is their calling, this is they're being paid to do this, and that they wouldn't do it. It's just so sad.
And Satan wins then, because people isolate and they finally it's a self-fulfilling thing. They don't care anyway. Not there, and they're not even noticing. So I won't go back. I really like your advertisement for the method. It's wonderful. In closing, what is your prayer for the church in the 21st century moving forward?
It's so important that we remain as positive and as affirmative as possible, because it's so easy just to pray, you know, that the end will come. And in people's lives, the overload is so great, and the loneliness is so awesome, and there are just so many problems almost in every direction. And if you bring in that same message, that really is not helpful at all. And you really need to stay in bed if you're not going to get up in the morning and be as affirmative and as possible. It's really, really contagious. Either is contagious, your doom and gloom or your optimism. And people, by nature, do want to be optimistic, even though they aren't by nature. And we find this, especially as it relates to the church, because if they're still with the church, they realize there's got to be some hope somewhere. And because of the pastor, if the pastor's interested in outreach and in church attendance, the parishioners will too. We had this last weekend with a storm, and many churches were called off. And it was interesting how many folks then approach us and want to know exactly what the church attendance was. It was that important to them. I would say almost everyone that spoke with me wanted to know what the attendance was. And so that tells you, at least for those who are there, that there is more of an affirmation and a positive attitude than you might think. So you don't want to bring in the other opposite.
Right. So pick up on the life of Christ that's there for us to share and enjoy. I remember 35 years ago, I think you were the first person I heard say it, you either curse the darkness or you light a candle. And you've shown us how to do that. Thank you so much for these words today. We'll treasure them through the years and the generations to come. And God bless you in every way.
Well, our prayer is that Good Shepherd will continue to be the lodestar that it has been. It's a good field to train future pastors and seminarians, and we pray that continue to be the case.